Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
Peter, you look very handsome.
ENN's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
I want to go chase the squall.
Peter's nothing interesting to say.
This is Gil.
Now, from the ESPN New York News Desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Hey. Hello, everyone. Welcome to ENN on a Friday evening. I'd like to start off by saying good evening to Michael.
Now, listen.
You go ahead. RJ, would it be putting you on the spot to ask you to find the version of him and Don doing almost the same thing? It's a tough apples to apples comparison. I'll start off by saying good evening to Don.
You do ecstasy? Also want to make an announcement.
Oh.
That Anita's Daily Wager is back.
Nice.
Show will be tonight at 10.
It's a good show.
At 10:20, I will be your special guest to talk a little NHL odds for the upcoming season.
Wow.
Oh, wait, and guess what? That means we're close to a little ice pucks. What's your segment called?
Ice picks.
Right.
Yeah, we're probably a good they're going to start probably early August, so we're still a little ways away, but
and you could bet at Pro Rata if you want.
I love Pro Rata. Andrew, you should be calling into Anita's show to talk soccer picks.
Bundesliga.
Well said.
So well,
guys,
hey there.
I guaranteed you some good audio.
Yes.
That you had not heard yet. I know.
No, you said great audio. Not good. Great.
Well, it's from a man who's not good, but great. And his name is Michael Wilbon. A lot of people were very affected by the Red Sox statement the other day. The Red Sox coming out, not only denouncing racism, but acknowledging how bad it's been in Boston for so long and how it is a problem in their fan base specifically. They outlined the amount of times it was reported in the stadium just this last season alone. And it's really seemed to affect a lot of people who have felt this way before. And again, it's one of the things we talk about, guys. When you get that acknowledgement that from the corporate acknowledgement from the people who really sort of benefit from these fans and have to call them out, it resonates. It means more. And let's hear from Michael Wilbon on his thoughts about Boston, the Red Sox statement, and much more.
I don't know which one shocked me more. NASCAR saying we're getting rid of the Confederate flag or an admission in Boston. And I've had this experience. See, this is where the conversation goes, where black people all have one conversation and apparently most white people have another. Because my problem with Boston, and first of all, nothing with the Red Sox. Torrey Hunter said this has nothing to do with the players or the organization. This has to do with Boston, all right? The only times I've been called an N-word to my face in public have been in Boston Garden. The Red Sox don't play there. The Celtics do. Okay? The only time I feared for my life on the streets, feared for my life, I was with David Dupree, who you know well, and we were in Boston covering a series, and we wound up in South Boston, and a white cab driver, screeches over to the curb and says, get in. I don't know where you guys think you are, okay? So black people, all of us, or close enough to all of us, have had the conversation about Boston forever. And one of the reasons I don't go on WEEI anymore, despite some hosts I love, are that there are too many times where I'm baited into something and I wind up screaming at the host and they don't own it. I grew up in the most segregated city in America at the time, Chicago, Illinois. We know what it is and we know what it isn't and we had to own it. Too often in Boston, no one owned it. That's what the Red Sox did. That's a first or almost a first in terms of systematic ownership. And the anger isn't that Boston is the same as it was in 1980 or 1960. That's not it. But they didn't own it. And too often now, they, the fans, the residents, New England, they don't own it. This, Torrey Hunter was saying, is own it. That's how you start. You can't start a revolution if you don't own what you do. This is a huge step that people might not associate it with being as big as NASCAR banning a Confederate flag, but I do, because this conversation has been going on forever. One side of the street sees it one way, and the other side sees it another. Until there's some sort of meeting, Tony, this was going to continue about black folks and how we feel about Boston and the way we were treated in Boston. No matter what its reputation for being liberal city and a liberal state, that was garbage, because you were as likely to be called the N-word in Boston to your face as you were in Selma, Alabama for 100 years. And if anybody doesn't want to accept that, go on Twitter now. Now, that's what Torrey Hunter was talking about. That's what the Red Sox owned yesterday. God bless them.
Did I deliver with the strong audio that I promised?
Well,
I said it at the time. It was a humongous statement by the Red Sox. I was stunned that they owned it because, as Wilbon said, it's not just the Red Sox. I'm sure it goes on at Celtic games and Bruin games and in the streets of Boston. But the Red Sox owned it. And now I think it's going to make it easier for fans to point out other fans at Fenway Park where they're not going to be the...
It's such a great point, Michael. Now after this, and I'm going to play you a little bit more Red Sox Raider audio in a second, I feel, I have faith, maybe too much faith, that if it were to happen again next season... A section overheard it. You could see the person getting booed out of the stadium, you know, and people really rallying and getting angry. Let's hear from Kevin Youkilis, the former Red Sox first baseman.
Boston was tough. You know, being a fan favorite there, being a white guy, being, you know, Jewish, and Brookline right down the street is a very Jewish neighborhood. I was lucky. You know, they loved me, but I did see some tension with even my own teammates. And there was one incident where a fan came running down and was being extra harsh towards one of our black players. And I just got fed up and I stood up and I told him to shut the F up. And if he doesn't like it, get the hell out of here. And I'll never forget that moment because I was boiling, because you could just see it was this tension, and it wasn't the same tension that was towards a white player. But for the most part, I'd like to say too, though, the Red Sox fans, you know, it's not the majority. It's a minority of people that act like that, but the minority is too big and you have to eliminate that. And there's no place for that.
I'm just amazed that in this day and time in our country's history, let's say it was when Torrey Hunter played, 2006, that somebody would feel it's okay in a crowd of 35,000 people to scream at the top of your lungs the N-word. It's unbelievable. So if anything happens out of this, one of the things that you hope happens is that there's going to be a derisive look from everybody if somebody screams that. But again, people feel okay with screaming that, and they have for the longest time. Well,
but again, it's that knee-jerk reaction. It's the few, not the many. The fans are still great. Largely, the organizations representing that city don't say anything. The talk show host will always shout down somebody who has that opinion, which has been the allegation about sports radio in Boston for a long time. And it emboldens the idea that it's not that big of a deal. Now the Red Sox kind of broke that tradition. They owned it. So you're right. Now it can't be all, it's just a few, ignore them. It's bigger than that. And even if it's just a few is too many. One's too many. So own it, move on, and now I think you will start to see things slowly but surely change.
Now, I will say this. I have been at ballparks, and I've been at arenas where I have sat with my wife. It hasn't happened that much with my kids, but with my wife. And people, there's no decency anymore. People just drop F-bombs as they're screaming. I mean, there's kids sitting there. But it's hard to be the guy who stands up and says, hey, because you're going to get yourself in a fight. You're going to get yourself in a fight. And in this day and age, you really want to fight where somebody could shoot you?
Well, you would have to think these, if anything comes from this, the bare minimum you'd think would be that if that fight is not about an F-bomb, but an N-bomb, you would hope, moving forward, if there's been any progress, that person who said it is going to be so outmanned and so not want any problems.
Right.
That's the hope. And by the way, though, Michael, if you want to be shocked, I mean, I'm following an Instagram account called Karen's Gone Wild, and it's basically white women being psychotic and racist, the amount of videos that are popping up every day with things that you could not believe a human being is capable of saying.
How about the lady in California?
Yeah, you. By the way, I missed that one. You were telling me about that. Oh no, I did see one of them. That's right.
So distressing.
And
she was going after an Asian man, I believe.
And an Asian woman, and another one. And if you're not, you know, if jump on Instagram and at least go check the account. While you're there, give me a follow at Rosenberg Radio.
I've always wondered about one thing. Like a lot of these Karens go back to where you came from. I mean, if you know the history of the country, we all came from somewhere else other than the American Indian.
We
all come from somewhere else.
There's a couple of things that happen in all these racist videos that are all the same that have become my favorite parts. There is go back where you came from, which is usually default from I don't think you're a black American. You're from somewhere else. So I don't know where. I'm uneducated and stupid. I'll just say go back to where you came from. They love that one. And then my favorite one is they're so angry in the moment. They're so irrationally angry that they think they're truly right and they're fighting for a just cause. So they almost always, without fail, when they notice the camera on them, go, good, put this on the internet. And it's like, you're gonna regret that in an hour. You're gonna think you may have just ruined your life because you're such a disgusting person and you let this vitriol and hate come to the surface. But it's amazing how much of it still happens, Michael. And imagine, isn't it crazy when you think about the videos that we're seeing popping up right now in 2020? Imagine if there'd been cell phone cameras and people were keeping an eye in the 60s. Can you imagine?
Who was it? Will Smith. Racism isn't new. It's just being filmed. Or there isn't more racism. It's now being filmed. So we see it.
But if you were to look, I would imagine it's decreased year by year. And yet there's still that much of it that as cameras increase, you just see tons.
It's like now there's more testing.
Exactly. Yeah, because there is a chance there's less COVID actually going around, but you're seeing more through testing.
But
and by the way, did you guys see this post? Sorry, not to give my Instagram another plug, Rosenberg Radio, but
sickening.
Well, by the way, though, if you have an idea of the kind of beliefs I have and you enjoy them, go ahead and follow. If not,
don't
follow. I posted this today on my Instagram, a sign from a protest. It says Black Lives Matter on top, and it says treat racism like COVID-19. 1, assume you have it. 2, listen to experts about it. 3, don't spread it. 4, be willing to change your life to end it. Underneath that, it says, if you can't do 1 through 4, inject 1 bottle of Lysol or of bleach. So it's really true, though. It is an illness that we all are capable of having. And some would seemingly have it asymptomatically. It's spread by people opening their mouths. And I just find it to be so interesting that we're dealing with both this physical virus and then also this emotional and mental virus at the same time.
It's about protection.
Did you guys see the Pete Carroll story earlier?
Yeah.
Pretty interesting here. Pete Carroll on Seahawks.com talking about his regrets about not signing Colin Kaepernick.
People had called me during the time before we ever got him in and said, hey, he'd be great in your program. He may not be able to play here or there, but he certainly could play for you. I agreed with that. He could play for us. He could have been a fantastic player in a program. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out. And then when you look back, I felt like we missed the opportunity. So as I look back at it, I wish we could have figured it out and known what we know now and given him the chance, because I would love to see him play football all those years.
Oh, well, wait a minute, Pete. Why didn't it work out? So you thought he'd be a perfect fit. Why didn't it work out? Was he demanding $30 million, or were you told not to sign him? I mean, that leaves a lot of room to really narrow in and go, tell me why you didn't sign him. I mean, that's left unanswered.
And he doesn't have to bury him. Like, if it was a money issue, he could just say, we could tell we weren't going to be able to agree to terms.
And then he says, if I knew what I know now, well, then it definitely had to do with the kneeling.
But because it's all about the fight. right? Like, he wanted to do it. The reports were he wanted to sign him. And it didn't happen. Why? Well, probably because either management, ownership, or the fans, whatever, some kind of outside pressure or pressure above.
Really? Okay.
Had him not do it. Now, you fast forward to today, you feel emboldened enough now to fight. Where 4 months ago or four years ago, you probably didn't because you didn't feel that there'd be the backing. So that, like what you said, Michael, the person that's shouting the F-bomb, you know, in the stadium, you don't want to get into a fight. So you back down. Now you feel like, you know what, I'm willing to get into that fight.
Also, there is a follow-up, actually. So he gets into a little bit more detail. Let's hear more from Pete Carroll.
The reason it wasn't the right fit is because they held him in such high regard. I didn't see him as a backup quarterback, and I didn't want to put him in that situation with Russ, and I just didn't feel like it would fit right. So that's the way I felt about it. I just wish it would happen, and I wish we would have been a part of it when the time was available. Then, you know, we're kind of set up right now, so it's football wise, it doesn't seem to fit us. But like I said, but there's a lot of time here. We'll see what happens.
I hate that.
Which part?
You know what that is?
It's,
right?
it's like somebody. Well, I can't offer you this job because you're overqualified. Exactly. Offer it to me.
Exactly.
Let me see if I'll take it.
You're too qualified for this job.
So I told
I'm
you guys
interviewing for it.
I told you guys what I heard at that time. I heard at that time that the teammates, and we've heard that, guys, this has been recurring, and I feel bad saying it because he seems like a nice enough guy. Teammates don't love Russell Wilson.
Right.
And if Cap had been in the room, given everything, the team would have left Russell Wilson and wanted Cap as quarterback. And obviously, Wilson's been incredibly successful, so you're not trying to get him out of there. So I think they decided, rather than have a quote-unquote mutiny, it made more sense to just not go with it.
And if you go back to that time, it seemed like Seattle might have been slipping a little bit.
Hey, Seattle.
Like, some of the veterans were leaving. They were getting older. Then you had the resurgence.
Pete Carroll also said another interesting piece, though.
Oh, really? So this keeps going.
He said yesterday a team called to ask about information about Colin Kaepernick and their time together and their tryout or their, you know, when he went out there. So there may be, I will say this, if you just want to separate into the Colin Kaepernick story, this, with everything that's going on, I don't know about you guys, this is the first time in a few years that I do think there's like still a slight chance he now gets a job.
Oh, I think so. I really believe he'll be offered a job. I don't know if he'll take it, but I think when camps open, I think there will be a couple of teams that will give him a chance. Now, whether he'll take that chance or not, I don't know. Because, again, he may think to himself, like, think of the pressure he'll be under to try to make the team. Because the narrative would then be, if he doesn't make the team, well, see, this is why. It was never had anything to do with
the kneeling.
It was because he wasn't that good.
I feel sort of weird saying this, but I almost feel like if you invite him to camp, you should only do it if you have, if you know that at worst case scenario, you'll give him the third quarterback job. If not, I don't think otherwise you bring him to camp. You got to be comfortable. And Don, as we've talked about, no matter how much Cap could have potentially gotten rusty over the last 4 years, is there any rustiness that would have been worse than the Jets' backup quarterbacks last year?
And listen, and if he doesn't want to be the third string, well, then he doesn't want to be the third string, right? I mean, then that's on him. But you're right.
When you look at some
of the quarterbacks in this league, really,
that's what I'm saying.
He can't be on your practice squad?
You bring him in and you go, we like the idea of him being on the team because of what it would mean. And yes, in preseason, he's going to compete. And you say, oh, he's competing for a job. But you know that even if he doesn't make it, you're going to keep him around to be a leader on the team. And you're going to be happy to have him. I think that's the only way that it happens. But we'll see. One person who's working on a mega deal. It's funny. The irony, we're talking about Colin Kaepernick, who peacefully protested, can't get a deal. But there is someone who some people thought tried to murder someone on the football field who is going to get a deal. And that would be Myles Garrett. He has 2 years left on his rookie contract after the Browns picked up his fifth-year option, but they are engaged in negotiations, according to our own Jeremy Fowler, to get a huge deal done soon. And by the way, I'm not suggesting that Myles Garrett shouldn't get a deal for the mistake that he made. I'm just saying. I would certainly argue that what happened in his situation was more egregious than anything Colin Kaepernick's ever done. Speaking Browns, you got to think, and Steelers, Antonio Brown, you remember him? He used to be a part of that rivalry.
AB.
I'm familiar with his work.
Are you familiar with his felony burglary work? He has pled no contest to felony burglary with battery from that altercation with a moving van company outside of his Hollywood, Florida home. He's not facing jail time, but he was given 2 years of probation and must complete 100 hours of community service.
Well, yeah, that's not good.
But,
let's
guys,
see if somebody gives him a job. After the wackiness that he showed over that stretch of time, I want to see if anybody gives him a job.
I've said it, and I'll say it again. If he just stays quiet for a long enough period of time, he'll get a job. I really thought that's all it took. Don, what about you? I think with his talent level, if nothing came from any of the legal things and he didn't have another explosion, I would bet that by training camp he has a job or gets an opportunity.
Well, we got 6 weeks, right?
If Tampa Bay didn't have such good wide receivers, I'm sure that Brady would push it.
That's what I thought would have happened, but yeah, he's loaded there. Mitch Trubisky said that despite the team trading for Nick Foles in the offseason, he feels that the Bears are still his team. and that the trade pissed him off, but quote, in a good way.
Oh.
I've never been ticked off in a good way.
Well,
they didn't pick up his fifth-year option, so I don't think it's his team.
I guess he's saying it's going to motivate him.
Okay.
Well, you got to say something, Michael. What are you going to say? Are you going to cry? He's trying to just fire himself up, but no, it's over. And
they didn't take Pat Mahomes. Oh.
Oh.
Former Patriot Christian Fauria.
And they traded up to get Mitch Trubisky as if people were like climbing over themselves for him.
Oh, yeah, no, he was the truth. Chicago doesn't always get it right at quarterback. You notice that? Quarterback in Chicago, not a thing. Really?
Even one of the greatest teams in the history of football, the 85 Bears.
It was Jim McMahon.
Jim McMahon. Oh, he was fine.
I loved it. But
you would think one of the great football teams of all time would like have their quarterback in the top like six or seven players on the team.
Tell me I'm wrong. They make a movie. If they made a movie about the 85 Bears, you get a young Michael Keaton to play Jim McMahon. Thoughts?
No.
Yeah.
Love Michael Keaton as Jim McMahon. Love him.
Well, not now.
No, young Keaton.
You said a young.
Well, you can't turn back the clock.
If I can turn back time.
Is there a team with worse quarterbacks? And I know that my team's in the conversation.
Oh, what a great subject.
Oh, good list.
Oh.
Is there a team with worse quarterbacks in history than the Bears?
Because you would knee-jerk would be Cleveland, but I can give you Bernie Kosar. I can give you Brian Sipe.
And if you're talking Chicago, you're talking Kyle Orton. You're talking sexy Rexy Grossman. You're talking
went
Jim
to a
McMahon.
Super Bowl.
Mitch Trubisky. Yeah, they somehow did with that team.
Oh, there's so many, though, right? Doug Flutie for a bit. The one team he actually didn't have some success with.
I don't even remember that. That happened?
Yeah.
Can we at least give some love to Sid Luckman? Pretty darn good.
Oh, yeah. But you're going back a ways.
Yeah.
A little bit. Don,
let's disclaimer with the Super Bowl era, shall we?
Okay, that's fair.
Now, you would say the Skins.
Bobby Lane?
The Skins are in the conversation.
That's a line. What am I saying? Yeah, what am I saying?
The Skins are in the worst quarterback conversation. Sadly.
Well, you're not a big Gus Frerotte guy?
There's so many.
Jim Harbaugh.
Well, for the Bears? Harbaugh was a backup.
Even
Tom Zach?
Well, he played for a while.
You a big Tom Zach guy?
The Bears had him, too.
That's what I meant.
There's a website that rates them. Okay, so they have Luckman first.
Right.
Then they
Sid Luckman!
Jim McMahon, Jay Cutler, Harbaugh number four.
Jim McMahon's two?
That's bad.
George Blanda, fifth. Kyle Orton, sixth.
Oh, if Kyle
Eric Kramer, seventh. The great Bobby Douglas, two S's, eight.
That's right. You're Trubisky, the big Bobby nine. Douglas, man.
Wow. Love Douglas. And Doug Flutie, 10.
They got to be. Doug Flutie's on the in the top 10, Peter, and you didn't even remember he played for.
Did he take any snaps there?
Yeah. He played
how many
87
games?
And a little of 86.
Oh, it was the beginning.
He played a year and a bit, and he's 10.
Jim Miller's 11.
Oh,
Rex Grossman, 12.
Oh.
Josh McCown, 13. Peter's favorite, Johnny Lujack, 14.
I'm a big fan.
Mike Tomczak, 15. Bill Wade, 16. Vince Evans, 17. Steve Fuller, 18. Steve Walsh, 19. And, of course, everybody's favorite. Kids all over Chicago still have his poster in their bedroom. Rudy Bukic.
Peter, you know what? It doesn't happen very often that you can actually pinpoint the most brilliant thing you ever said on a show.
Oh. What
you
about
just
my
off the top of your head, is there a team that had worse quarterbacks than the Chicago Bears? Off the top of your head, it's the most brilliant thing you ever said on the show. I'm not insulting you.
Better
I'm
than my baseball. You were so impressed with my baseball argument.
Yeah, but that was brewing. This was off the top of your head. You didn't know you were going to say it 3 seconds before you said it.
Most of the things he says.
But it's because I don't think there's anybody even close. The Lions may be close because it'll be the same, right? It'll be Bobby Lane and then who?
Well, no.
Scott Mitchell?
Right now, though, their current quarterback, the Lions' current quarterback, is better than everyone on the Bears' list. he's their current quarterback, and they've done nothing. He's better than the whole Bears' list.
He's not better than Luckman.
Okay, except Luckman.
Everybody has Luckman.
Going back 80 years.
Sid Luckman. Detroit's got Bobby Lane, and Chicago's got Sid Luckman, but their number two, Matthew Stafford, is better than anybody else.
I hope he doesn't
on the
play.
Chicago
well,
Bears.
I mean, if you think about
Rodney
it.
Rodney Pete's better than most of the Bears'
Nick
list.
If Nick Foles has a good year, he rockets up the number three.
I know.
Right behind Luckman and McMahon.
I want to go over this like during the break and see if there's anybody that's even close to the Bears. There can't be.
It's really hard because most teams you instantly think of one quarterback. So, anyways, I'm glad that maybe
Bruce, thank you, Peter. That was
please.
A gift. Oh, dearly. All those people, they don't know anything about sports. Right there.
Go scratch.
Come on.
On this day in 2009.
Oh, I know. I know what happened. That's
the
Cabrera guy.
Popped up. Castillo. Drop the ball. Here comes Teixeira. And the Yankees win. Oh, my goodness. He dropped the ball. What an ending. The Yankees win 9-8 in the most improbable fashion.
It sounds like you're going to go, what an idiot. Instead of what an ending, I thought you were going to go, what an idiot.
There's two things I will always remember about that, and it's underplayed.
Right.
Teixeira scoring from first.
Right.
And you can say, well, you're supposed to run harder all the time. Okay, great, Gandhi, whatever, but people don't. He's running all out on a pop-up to second to end the game. That's why they won. And then number two, the players had no idea. Do we celebrate with A-Rod who just popped up the second?
Right.
And they did. And then also I'll remember – all four calls, Yankee Radio, Yankee TV, Met Radio, Met TV, all were almost identical.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.